I've been wanting to talk about this for a long time because I think it's super interesting. I think it's not getting enough attention because it's a very interesting risk in this space. So I want to talk about MEV, minor extractable value, as well as flash bots, what they are, why they're so risky, and anything around that topic. We'll start off with, what is minor extractable value? There's a big difference between Bitcoin and Ethereum, right? Bitcoin and Ethereum are both layer one infrastructure in which you can build a lot of stuff on top. And with Bitcoin, it's a lot easier because it's just simple payments. It's just sending Bitcoin here, sending Bitcoin there, and allowing transactions to happen. Whereas on Ethereum, it's a big computer. And when it's a big computer, you can do a lot more than just sending payments. And that's how we have, you know, DEXs, we have creation of stable coins, we have all these very interesting structures because we have all of them on smart contracts. You can execute a lot more complex things than just payments. So that's pretty cool. Now, because they're quite different in the use cases, the kind of economic risk, the price of risk is quite different. I'll just explain what Bitcoin's UTXO versus Ethereum's accounts is. So UTXO is unspent transaction executed once. And it just means that if you make payments with coffee, let's say coffee is $5, and you only have $10, a $10 note, then you would give the entire $10 and they will create a $5 note for you. Whereas on Ethereum, you just cancel things off on its own. Like that's the very high level thing. So Bitcoin is where you give the entire transaction and then they will return the entire transaction in each denomination that it's repayable. That's a very high level difference. So which risk do you think is more expensive on Ethereum? Expensive for users. Number one, 51% attack. Number two, front running. And number three, forking. So the cost to 51% attack is about $420,000 per hour on Ethereum. And that's where you take over 51% of the miners and you change the transactions, you prioritize your transactions or whatever. So that's 51% attack. Front running is where there are transactions going to be executed and you can front run that by paying more transaction fees and you front run that transaction. And number three is forking. So forking is really where you replicate the entire system. You create a new fork of it, a new direction of which all the past transactions are still valid, but you're creating new transactions to build that chain because blockchain is all blocks, right? So it's a big train and then you're adding blocks into that. So forking is one of the train carriages. You split them into two and you build on the other one. So they are all risks in the space. You know, the first risk, the 51% attack, as I mentioned, is $420,000 per hour. And that's very expensive. But on Ethereum itself, the biggest risk is front running. And here's why. Because on Bitcoin, the biggest risk is the 51% attack because it's simple payments, as I mentioned, where it's just going to be sending transactions from one place to another. So there's no smart contract on Bitcoin. That's why it's the UTXO ledger because there is no way that it can calculate. It's just sending your entire bank account. Then they will give the entire bank account back to you minus whatever you've paid. There isn't a plus minus function you can do because there is no smart contract that does that. Whereas on Ethereum, you can do that. You can do a lot more validation, a lot of transactions. That's why the validators are quite different on Ethereum versus Bitcoin. So because you can do so many more things on there, the greater risk is on front running. Why? Because the application, at least one of the biggest applications that is being built on Ethereum now, is DeFi. Every single day, just on DEXs alone, decentralized exchanges alone, you have at least $10 billion in trade. So if you can front run that, that's a lot of money that is going to be lost, right? The risk is a lot higher in price when using Ethereum. So that's one of the biggest risks in Ethereum. As much as I want to say that Ethereum, you know, it's great. Miners could be bad actors and they could help to intensify this front running. And it's going to be very costly for anyone using that because there are a lot of other like arbitrage risks coming in. And that's why we're going to talk about arbitrage bots. So arbitrage bots is where they look at an opportunity and they will front run you. So they will execute first, then you execute next. When you execute next, the prices get a bit more expensive because of the entire infrastructure that we've built. And then the front running bot will sell after that and they earn the price difference. And it's actually very, very profitable in this case. So how do we reduce that? How do we remove that kind of risk? So what is flash bots? What is MEV? We're going to talk about arbitrage bots. And where in this entire space we're going to focus on? We're going to focus primarily on DEXs, decentralized exchange. There are a lot of other things that we can focus on, but I consider decentralized exchange as the gatekeeper before anyone comes into DeFi. You're trading assets, and this trade is between all the users in the space. And before you can enter any of these DeFi protocols, you go to this gatekeeper and you exchange for the token that is valid for the specific protocol. So that's why DEXs are so big, and that's why DEXs is so important, because they're really the gatekeepers to entering different kind of protocols. And that's also where it's one of the biggest risks, and that's also where you can exploit inefficiencies. So how do we exploit inefficiencies? You increase your gas prices, your transaction fee, so that you are prioritized to execute your transaction, hence you do your arbitrage. Or you can optimize your network latency to front run. Network latency is the duration in which your transactions are approved or executed. Before we go into details, how this entire system works is when I have Lisa tokens and I want to change it to Ethereum and I'm going to Uniswap to do that, then I will make a request and tell the machine that, hey, I have 100 Lisa tokens and I want to change it for whatever amount of ETH there will be. So this transaction goes to the system. It doesn't get accepted first. So it goes to the system and then it goes to this thing called a mempool. And a mempool is a temporary thing where all the transactions will be in there. And from there, it will be ordered by priority and then they will be executed or they'll be validated and added to the block. Okay, so you have a request, goes into a pool, and then it will be added into a block and then it will be added to the entire blockchain. As easy as that. And this is where it becomes very risky because if there's a big trade, like 100 Lisa tokens, that's just 100 tokens, right? If you're doing, I don't know, $10 million worth of Ethereum and you're just doing on this very transparent system, then it goes into this mempool, which it will always be there. And when it's in the mempool, people can see that. People will see that, oh, this person wants to execute so much tokens or so much money, and it's going to be worth so much. What I can do is then I will also execute another transaction and I could pay higher fees so that I get validated first. I'll be added into the entire chain first. Then when that guy comes in with his $100 million worth of Ethereum, then he has to pay a higher price because you don't get to set that price. Or even if you set the price at X percent of slippage, then because of how dynamic the system is, you might fall out of the slippage and you don't execute your transaction. So there are a lot of little things like that where it's inefficiency, right? So you've got bots trying to exploit these inefficiencies. This becomes a systemic risk to the consensus security or crypto economics of the layer one of Ethereum. And that's why a lot of people are looking at other alternatives to kill Ethereum. It's not because Ethereum is inefficient or it's not because Ethereum is bad, but because there are inefficiencies on Ethereum that you can try to improve. So I will start off with how MEV comes into play, which is minor extractable value. You remember when we have a transaction, goes into the mempool. And so that's where you have miners just choosing these transactions to validate, right? And they're going to choose whoever that gives the highest fee and keep whatever block rewards there will be and then execute that. And that is where, you know, the miners don't really care what's going on. I just want to see who gives me the best returns. I'll validate you first and we'll move on with the next transaction. However, it's because the miners have this ability, right? It's all transparent. Once the miners start going in to see your transaction, starts going in to understand if there's a way to figure it out, what transaction is going to be, and I can front run you, or I can reorder the transactions so that I can put someone else first. So for instance, if I'm a miner and someone wants to do a very big trade and someone else wants to front run that, then they can maybe bribe me as a miner and then I'll reorder the arbitrage's trade first, or I can create an arbitrage bot to reorder that first and you can extract value that way. So that's what minor extractable value is talking about. This value that can be extracted by reorganizing and rearranging trade. So that's one example of the arbitrage opportunity in smart contracts on blockchain. There are a few other kind of arbitrage opportunities if you want to Google more, such as Oracle manipulation. And that's why it's very important to understand how oracles work, how decentralized oracles work. And Chainlink, of course, is one of them, in which they do a lot of research on understanding what kind of oracle manipulation could be, what is the mechanism designed to reduce economic rent, and how do you ensure that the price is what it's supposed to be using a decentralized oracle method and incentivizing the right party. So we have oracle manipulation. We have Ponzi scams or different kind of negative gambling behavior. We have new token launch and bad marketing strategies. And there are a lot of arbitrage opportunities in space. So if you want to look at other stuff, you can go and Google that. Going back to the minor extractable value, there's some high-level solutions. There's one on optimism, like optimism on layer 2. They're looking at redirecting the MEV to benefit the ecosystem. And then you have another one called Starkware, S-T-A-R-K-W-A-R-E. It's a very viable delay function, so it makes it immune to front running. There are some other systems out there in place as well, talking about how you can just allow these arbitrage bots to do bidding on a different space and the value will go directly to the miners. So it's kind of like openly bribing the miners. This in the short run might be bad, but in the long run, if you look at what's going on with the gas prices, it's dropped dramatically. And why? Because when these arbitrage bots are trying to front run other bots, they'll be competing against each other. You know how before you execute any transaction, you will get to choose the gas price and you can change that gas price, right? If you pay 100 gui and you realize that, oh, everyone is paying 120 gui, then you will bid again to be 125 gui. And so you can keep outbidding each other. And that's what the bot can do. And because it's outbidding each other to do arbitrage, Whereas you are just a regular person just trying to get access to whatever protocol you want to access, then it becomes very expensive for other users to want to use the system. So one of the short-term ways is to get this entire bidding system aside, go bid whatever you want, money goes directly to the miners, and then the rest of the regular users, not the bot arbitrage users, the rest of the regular users wanting to tap into DeFi protocols can just bid in the regular way. And hence we saw prices drop a few weeks ago. So if we go a bit back to DEX, because DEX is the gateway, and then a lot of inefficiencies are seen on DEXs. So I want to share five different types of DEX design flaws that allows these market inefficiencies to exist and hence exploit these inefficiencies. So the first one is pure revenue opportunities, where you can basically profit in every single trade you front run through price difference. The second is called priority gas auction. So all these gas prices that we're talking about, they're not fixed, right? And the market discovery is done by allowing people to vote or auction on the prices. And this auction is very interesting because it's an all-pay auction, as in every time you send in your transaction fees to allow for transactions to exist, then you always have to pay. So there is a situation where people or these bots or whoever, they want to outbid each other, and then the auction prices get higher and higher, and that causes this very high gas fees as well. Number one is all pay. So it's a very different kind of auction mechanism, because no matter what, as long as you are part of this game, you have to pay. And number two, it uses the first price auction. So whoever pays the highest price will get it. There are other auction mechanisms, which I think ETH2 is looking at, which is the second price auction, which is the highest bidder wins, but the price you pay is going to be the price of the second highest bidder. So yeah, there are some ways that you can look to change it up. The third design flaw is MEV, so miner extractable value. And this is the value extracted by miners directly from smart contracts. So through ordering and getting the different kind of fees, bribing them to reorder your transactions so that it will prioritize you first. Then the fourth one is fees based on forking attacks. So yeah, I think it's quite straightforward. And the last one is time-banded attacks. And so the higher the miner extractable value, you can rewrite the history to steal the funds. So yeah, those are some DEX design flaws in the system where it is not just the smart contract itself, but the smart contract interacting with the layer one infrastructure to allow these different inefficiencies to exist. So I want to talk about this because I never thought about how the economics of applications are not just the application itself, because it's built on the entire tech stack. And these other tech stack is also something that you have to consider in designing protocols or in understanding what kind of risks are available, because it is more than just the smart contract of the application itself, but also the economics that is surrounding the ability for you to validate any transactions on your app, like DEX, for instance. Does that make sense so far? So a little bit more about front running. So front running is where you gain benefits, profits, from information asymmetry. We usually call that economic rent. In the traditional capital market, it is illegal if the information that you get, additional information, is insider information or by the kind of market structure or power structure that you have in the space to give you more information than public information. That's illegal. That's inside trading, illegal trading, whatever. So an example would be there are a few senators last year where they knew about the whole COVID situation. They knew that the economy is going to close down and they sold a few of their shares and they got quite a big profit out of it. So that's example of front running because you have information asymmetry because you had a private meeting with the government and you're part of the government and you're monetizing that information illegally. That's wrong. That's outright wrong. Whereas if the information is public information and you can front run using public information, usually this is through high frequency trading and you get benefits through price discrepancies of the asset prices, maybe in different exchanges. So we have Bancor versus SushiSwap versus Uniswap. And you have some additional information that's just public, but the prices are not reflected in the other DEXs yet. So that's where you can front run and then you can benefit out of it. You know, you can do arbitrage that way. That's completely legal. Usually you have bots doing that. And this is basically the main business model for high frequency traders or high frequency trading firms, HFTs. The other way is also information asymmetry. So not just price discrepancies across different kind of DEXs, but you have some information and you get to process them, analyze them a lot faster. So you can kind of predict what prices would be. I don't know much about what Uniswap version 3 is doing because they recently launched the NFTs and allow NFTs to be traded. It was news everywhere and you saw like prices rise. At the same time, SushiSwap was also rising, like sushi prices. I don't know why, I don't know how. I didn't have time to process and analyze that, but I guess some people did and the prices rose and they got some benefits out of it. So those are some ways to extract value from arbitrages. Oh, that's why arbitrages exist. What they're extracting is what we call economic rent. So rent in economics is different from housing rent because this is additional revenue you get than what is economically or socially optimal or necessary in the space. So what we want to do is usually trying to reduce economic rent, and usually we do that through taxation. And in the blockchain system, instead of taxation, it's through transaction fees. So you compensate the economic rents that you get so that you kind of have a form of equilibrium in the space. That's the general idea. And because there are inefficiencies in the space, because there are ways to extract economic rent through these kind of inefficient market design of DEXs, then it really reduces the economic security of Ethereum as the main infrastructure protocol to allow all these systems to work. Yeah, I agree that, you know, front running is not really a risk. It's a negative externality. Yeah, and this is how it is a negative externality, because it allows these inefficiencies to exist. And for bots or specific kind of parties to extract more rent than the others, this is not socially optimal for the entire system to continuously benefit. Yeah. But there are some solutions that we have talked about already, where we are looking at, you know, the whole flashbots.net system. It shows you the value and trying to reduce smaller flashbots and smaller inefficiencies through arbitrage bots or flashbots to exist. And I'll just do a quick summary of what we've talked about. So today we talked about flashbots and MEV. So flashbots are just generalized arbitrage bots. And I think one of the reasons why they're more obvious in DEXs than centralized exchanges is also because the mathematical formulas is just out there. It's a lot easier to calculate, a lot easier to define the value extractable and the cost to do any front-running attacks to make this entire arbitrage opportunity very profitable. And we can also see on the link explore.flashbots.net, since beginning of last year, there's $500 million extracted in MVV. That's $500 million. That's a lot of money. And so MEV is very profitable. You've got a lot of bots doing that. And the idea is not that new, because you've got high frequency trading companies that exist to do all of that. We're just moving it from capital markets to what we have in decentralized exchanges. There's a lot of inefficiencies in DEXs, a lot of inefficiencies in the layer one infrastructure. And we've talked about a few ways to reduce that risk, or a few ways that people are exploring the risk. So yeah, this thing is quite interesting and something worth looking into, especially if you want to dive a bit more into understanding the kind of inefficiencies in the space. There could be design features to remove that, or some other economic analysis to figure out how to better deal with this systemic inefficiency or systemic flaw.